Laudato Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Well, hello there and a very warm welcome to today's broadcast. I'm Veronica Scaresbrick and I'll be with you for the next half hour, bringing you full coverage of Pope Benedict XVI's apostolic journey to the Czech Republic. Well, thanks so much for joining me once again. As I mentioned a moment ago, Pope Benedict XVI is currently in the Czech Republic on his 13th apostolic journey abroad, becoming the second pope to visit this landlocked nation in the heart of Europe. Pope John Paul II visited 3 times in the course of his pontificate. The Holy Father's pastoral visit to this Czech Republic is timed to coincide with the feast of St. Wenceslas, the 10th century prince, patron saint of the Czech people, a people which this year is among those marking the 20th anniversary from the fall of communism. Let's listen to the Holy Father's words on arrival at Prague Airport, as he praises the witness to the faith of the Czechs, who he describes as being brave in keeping the faith alive during persecution, inviting them, now that religious freedom has been restored, to rediscover Christian traditions which shaped their culture.
Now that religious freedom has been restored, I call upon all the citizens of the Republic to rediscover the Christian traditions which have shaped their culture, and I invite the Christian community to continue to make its voice heard as the nation addresses the challenges of the new millennium.
The Holy Father, who brings this message of hope, is already familiar with Prague, having visited there before being elected as Roman Pontiff. Prague, often described as a storybook city come true, a place of stone and lime palaces, one that, if you've ever seen, will never have forgotten. Architectural splendour is its hallmark. The Gothic legacy soaring to the skies goes back to the days of the Holy Roman Emperor under Charles IV and contrasts splendidly with the opulent lines of the ornate Baroque, which go back to the Habsburg Counter-Reformation. Goethe once referred to the city as the prettiest gem in the stone crown of the world. A gem which has as its crown the castle on the hill overlooking the Vltava River, which so inspired composers such as Smetana. On the second day of his visit, not only did the Pope leave Prague, but he also left Bohemia behind for that other region of the Czech Republic, Moravia. The more Catholic area of this nation, where out of a population of over 10 million inhabitants, just over 3 million are Catholic, and where fewer still are practicing Catholics. Linda Bordoni is currently in the Czech Republic following this apostolic visit, and reports for us on Sunday morning's open-air mass in Moravia's capital, Brno, which is located 200 kilometres away. A mere half-hour flight for the Pope in the presidential plane, then. But at this point, why not join Linda?
Moravia, the large eastern region of the Czech Republic, has its own particular makeup. A century-long history of foreign domination and religious strife, as well as its geographical proximity to Poland, Austria, Germany and Slovakia, have resulted in it really becoming the Czech nation's Catholic heartland. And that's why Pope Benedict chose to travel to its largest city, Brno, on Sunday morning to celebrate Mass. This is also why a large crowd was expected to be here, and in fact, by the time the Pope Mobile had begun its slow drive from Brno Airport to the nearby plain where the Mass took place, a sea of 150,000 people had taken their place in an atmosphere of solemn expectation. Organizers informed me that the majority of pilgrims present had travelled from bordering nations, with many of them camping overnight in the plain, so as to be certain not to miss a thing. As the Pope made his way through the clapping crowd, a sea of Czech and Vatican flags gently fluttered in the breeze. But before the start of the ceremony, one of the priests at the altar informed those present that it was the Pope's wish they follow in silence, asking them not to clap or wave their flags during the liturgy. A Czech journalist standing by told me that there is more to this request than meets the eye. During the long years of communist oppression, she explained, the crowds were ordered to clap loudly and to express their enthusiasm with visible manifestations of approval at all public events. The Pope's desire, therefore, she said, also reflects his will to reassure the faithful that the institution of the Catholic Church is worlds apart from the repressive political institutions they knew so well. In his homily, the Pope, just as he did on Saturday upon his arrival in Prague, recalled the nation's history of communist repression and said that societies that exclude God do so at their peril. History has demonstrated the absurdities to which man descends, the Pope said, when he excludes God from the horizon of his choices and actions.
A quale assurdità giunge l'uomo quando esclude Dio dall'orizzonte delle sue scelte e delle sue azioni.
This theme is definitely one of the leitmotives of the Pope's visit. In fact, it comes as Czechs prepare to mark 20 years since their 1989 Velvet Revolution, which defeated a regime that had ruthlessly persecuted the Catholic Church. And speaking beneath a white canopy beside a tall stainless steel cross, Pope Benedict warned that technical progress is not sufficient to guarantee the moral welfare of society.
Gli sviluppi tecnici ed il miglioramento delle strutture sociali sono importanti e certamente necessari, ma non bastano a garantire il benessere morale della società.
Man needs to be liberated from material oppressions, the Pope continued, but more profoundly, he must be saved from the evils that afflict the spirit.
Ma deve essere salvato e più profondamente dai mali che affliggono lo spirito.
As I have already had the occasion to mention during these past few days, the Pope's Czech pilgrimage is seen as a wonderful occasion to breathe new vigour and energy into the faith of a strongly secular society, with almost half the population professing to be atheist. His main appeal to the Czech people since his arrival Saturday is to reconsider the value and the strength of Christianity and the irreplaceable role it has played in their lives.
Lasciate sulla fede in Cristo i vostri progetti familiari, di lavoro, della scuola e le attività di ogni ambito della società.
Pope Benedict concluded the Mass with the recitation of the Sunday Angelus, and as he always does, he greeted those present in many languages. In English, he recalled the main theme of the scripture reading chosen for this Mass, the theme of hope. When all was over, a spontaneous explosion of affection and approval, with cheering and flag waving, rippled through the crowd. And it grew as the Pope boarded his Popemobile and again drove through a congregation, which included men and women wearing their traditional Moravian costume, brightly coloured and magnificently embroidered, and quite obviously part of the legacy of their far-reaching Austro-Hungarian heritage. With Pope Benedict XVI in the Czech Republic, I'm Linda Bordoni.
And our thanks there go to Linda Bordoni for bringing us this report on the open-air Mass in Brno, a place the Pope had already mentioned in his arrival speech in Prague on Saturday morning. On a more curious note.
In this scientific age, it is instructive to recall the example of Johann Gregor Mendel, the Augustinian abbot from Moravia, whose pioneering research laid the foundations of modern genetics.
Studies, these, of Gregor Mendel, which I'd like to add, this Augustinian abbot carried out on bees and peas. But getting back to Pope Benedict, following the Mass, he was back in Prague on Sunday afternoon for an ecumenical encounter at the Archbishop's house, hosted by the Archbishop of Prague, Cardinal Miloslav Ulk, and then on to Prague Castle for a meeting with the academic world. Academics from the most ancient university in Central Europe. Among those invited was philosopher Jan Sokol, a former dissident who highlights for us two key moments during which the Catholic Church fought against the communist oppression.
First was the pilgrimage in Moravia, in Velehrad, in 85, if I am right, where more than 100,000 people gathered and sifted out a vice minister, a communist vice minister. This was a big scandal and a sign of a popular resistance against the regime. And then there was a petition for religious liberty, which was signed by, I think, 500,000 people, which in a small country is a big number. So these were contributions of the, in particular, of the Catholic Church to the fall of communism.
You were listening there to philosopher and dissident Jan Sokol. Benedict XVI had already been to Prague Castle, which dominates this city, the previous afternoon, after the morning mass in Our Lady of Victory Church, where the Infant of Prague is housed. The castle is in an imposing building founded in the 9th century, always the centre of political power. He went there on a courtesy visit to President Václav Klaus, during which he and the president exchanged gifts. The Pope gave the President a mosaic of St. Wenceslas, and the President in return gave the Pope a Bohemian crystal cup and candelabra, and on a more personal touch, a piano stool, fitting in this city where music is a bonding element of culture among its inhabitants. Later, always on Saturday afternoon, the Holy Father met in this castle with political and civil authorities, together with representatives of the diplomatic corps, in a great hall dominated by giant Bohemian crystal chandeliers, an occasion during which he gave an address which focused on freedom. Paraphrasing his recent encyclical Caritas in Veritate, using the word freedom in the place of charity on this occasion, and saying, among other things,
"A renewal of hope. Is it not precisely this spirit that contemporary Europe requires? Europe is more than a continent. It is a home. And freedom finds its deepest meaning in a spiritual homeland. With full respect for the distinction between the political realm and that of religion, which indeed preserves the freedom of citizens to express religious belief and live accordingly, I wish to underline the irrepressible role of Christianity for the formation of the conscience of each generation."
The Swiss ambassador to the Holy See and to the Czech Republic, Jean-François Kammer, was present at this event.
Nearly 20 years since the fall of the Iron Curtain, it has there also a symbolic value, because the Pope in his words just stressed how important it is for each individual and also for the whole societies to have been able to recover the real liberty. Liberty in the sense of a liberty offered to the whole society to build a new democratic and free society, and also to liberty offered to each individual to think on his own and to contribute within his own family, within his own environment, to contribute to a development of the whole country. And I think this is a message of hope also for the future, and it is also a message of gratitude for what has been achieved in many of these countries liberated from the communist regime since 20 years.
And our thanks there go to the Swiss ambassador to the Holy See and to the Czech Republic, Jean-François Kammer. Pope Benedict ended his afternoon on Saturday with Vespers at Prague Cathedral, St. Vitus, housed within the compound of the castle itself, a Gothic structure dating back to 1344 and only completed in the 20th century. On this occasion, the Pope reminded the faithful once again of their regained freedom, calling on them to bear witness to the gospel, despite the burden of the legacy of communism. Society, the Pope remarked during his homily on this occasion, continues to suffer from the wounds caused by atheist ideology.
La società ricca ancora le ferite causate dall'ideologia atea.
And is often seduced by the modern mentality of hedonistic consumerism amid a dangerous crisis of human and religious values and a growing drift towards ethical and cultural relativism. In this context, there's an urgent need, he stressed, for a renewed effort throughout the Church so as to strengthen spiritual and moral values in present-day society. Before speaking to the faithful, the Pope knelt down in prayer in a side chapel dating back to the 14th century, a place where the relics of St. Wenceslas are normally housed. Relics removed each year in order to be translated to a place of pilgrimage nearby in time for celebration marking this saint's feast day. Celebrations which this year will be presided over by the Holy Father himself. An event which is to be the highlight of this pastoral journey and which takes the Holy Father to Stary Boleslav, 25 kilometres from Prague, where each year Czechs flock to mark the feast day of their patron saint, a charismatic figure who it seems all Czechs answer to, Catholics and non-Catholics alike. By the way, if you've ever visited Prague and have left the centre of the city heading towards some of its fashionable boulevards with their majestic Art Nouveau facades at the upper end of it, you'll have noticed an equestrian statue of this 10th century king. I mention this because in the 20th century, this vast square was often the scene of public protests. And if you look carefully at the base of this monument, there's a memorial dedicated to those who resisted Soviet tanks during the Prague Spring in 1968. It was also here that in January 1969, a student by the name of Jan Palach set fire to himself as a sign of protest against the Soviet invasion, you may just remember. But getting back to the appeal of Saint Wenceslas, given his popularity, I thought I'd find out more about him. So I asked the Czech Jesuit provincial, František Hilmar, to better explain this devotion, and plenty else as well. Just listen. Pope Benedict XVI is in the Czech Republic on a pastoral visit, which coincides with the feast of St. Wenceslas. What is the appeal of this charismatic figure which seems to unite all Czechs, Catholics and non-Catholics alike, I believe?
Yes, it depends on the perspective that we take. Let's say for an average citizen, St. Wenceslas is always an important historical personality, an important historical figure, a powerful symbol or representative of the Czech state whose history goes back into the 9th century to the principality and then later to the kingdom of Bohemia. So he is surely an important historical personality for all Czech citizens. He was also a symbol of Czech political independence, especially in the 19th century, you know, the movement of the Czech national revival and then the independence after the First World War. And also, let's say, from more higher perspective, he's kind of, during the monarchy, he was considered the defender of the nation and the heir of Czech lands, so kind of a hereditary ruler. So the Bohemian royal crown is kept in the treasury of St. Vitus Cathedral, is placed on the cranium, on the skull of St. Wenceslas. So St. Wenceslas is a point of reference for rulers and for politicians. And for Christians, St. Wenceslas is a saint who was murdered by his own brother for taking Christianity too seriously, to put it like simply. So he's a symbol of the Christian roots of the Czech nation, and also of the conflict, eternal conflict, we would say, between the gentle power of Christian civilization and, let's say, brutality of physical violence and raw desire for power. And he's also kind of a symbol of a possible or ideal harmony between the state and the church, like an ideal of an ancient ideal ruler. And for Catholics, he's also a source of patriotism and of awareness that the roots of the Czech nation, of the Czech state, are closely linked with the Catholic Church as well.
They say that practicing Catholics are far and few. Mm-hmm. Is this true? And if so, in your opinion, why is this?
Practicing Catholics are few. That's true. About, let's say, 4 to 5% of the population of the country are practicing Catholics. They go to Mass regularly. But in spite of that, one must say that Catholic Church is still the biggest, let's say, organized or structured or spiritually united group, a coherent group in the Czech society. And I would say about 90% of all who claim adherence to a religion are in fact Catholics. So in a sense, we are few, the Catholics are few, but still are very, let's say, significant group and important presence in the Czech society.
They say your nation is not interested in religion, at least the secular press says that.
Czech nation, is it not interested in religion? I would say no. It also depends on what we mean by religion. I would say instead of a lack of interest, I would say it's kind of a lack of a full trust. It's kind of a caution in relation to the organized churches. But on the other hand, one can notice a deeper, let's say, spiritual insight. I would say that, we can say that the Czechs are kind of idealists that have too high or very high moral expectations with regard to those who believe, and then those high expectations are often frustrated. Well, experience shows that we are not as ideal. So, and then we cannot, let's say, work out this, you know, to keep the fruitful tension between a high ideal and then the reality of our, let's say, poor strength or poor ability to fulfill these expectations. And there is also kind of a shyness or external shyness of the expression of our religious experience, yeah. And now, in the last, let's say, decades, I would say that rather than atheism, I think that we live in a period or in a society that is religiously and from the point of view of Christianity almost illiterate. So there is very low level of real knowledge of what Christianity means, and this is in fact one of the consequences of 40 years of communism. So I wouldn't say that the Czechs are real atheists, so they are not interested in religion. Then even very recently, I think that it's possible to detect a kind of a a renewed interest in religion, in spirituality, in especially among, let's say, people in urban society, among educated people, people who hold some responsibilities. It's kind of a horror vacui, you know, the anxiety of the vacuum, of the empty space in which there is nothing, that just political and power and struggles of power and everything. So many people feel the necessity to fill in this vacuum by something, you know, deep and that could carry on our human experience, our human life.
How would you describe Catholic spirituality in your nation then? You just mentioned this in part.
Yeah.
Would you add anything to that? Is there a particular hallmark?
Yes. I think. Our Catholic, Czech Catholic spirituality, I would say, in a sense, it's kind of emotional, you know. It's less emotional than, let's say, the Orthodox or far more Eastern Christianity, but still, it is emotional. But on the other hand, it's kind of shy, because we would need to make a step from, let's say, external piety to this interior religious experience, and to make this step is not easy, but people try to do it, and that's why they feel a bit uncertain, but feel attracted by religion. So it's kind of an interior religiosity, and let's say high expectations.
20 years on from the fall of the communist regime, there must be a generational gap, a sort of before and after syndrome. I mean, you know, young people who are 20 today, they haven't ever known communism.
Yes.
But surely it's not as clear-cut as that, is it?
No. Yeah, no, it's not. Personally, I feel a deep gratitude for the last 20 years of freedom, of, let's say, political and, let's say, religious freedom. It's very interesting to see how much has been done in the last 20 years. But on the other hand, that's how much more we would like to do, and which was not possible. So there is also kind of a tension. And there is also this feeling that even the, let's say, the present situation of our society or of our church is not as good as we would like. But on the other hand, I think we should be really grateful. In a sense, we should be more happy with what we have.
The Czech Jesuit provincial František Hilmar. Meanwhile, as I speak, the flag which flies high over Prague Castle continues to proclaim the motto, Truth Wins, as Pope Benedict himself mentioned in his arrival speech in the Czech Republic.
The presidential flag flying over Prague Castle proclaims the motto, Pravda vítězí, the truth wins. It is my earnest hope that the light of truth will continue to guide this nation, so blessed throughout its history by the witness of great saints and martyrs.
A visit, this, to the Czech Republic, which marks Pope Benedict XVI's 13th apostolic journey abroad, one which has its own motto too, the love of Christ is our strength. And that brings me up to time. I do hope you enjoyed this broadcast. Thanks for listening. I'm Veronica Scaresbrick. Meanwhile, be sure to check out our website. The address is www.vaticanradio.org. Bye for now.
Laudator Jesus Christus.